Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. We're so glad you're joining us on this December evening or listening via our podcast.
You're all tired from dancing, aren't you?
Dancing all the weekend away. Yes, the Nutcracker, the 48th Nutcracker from Little Ballet Theater was this weekend.
Wow.
It was fabulous, of course.
And nobody broke a leg or anything.
Right. You know, you don't say break a leg in dance.
I know. Apparently, yeah. We don't say that anymore, do we? For
well,
any
it's
show business.
Theater. You could still say it in theater, can't you?
Oh, see, no, I thought it was nothing.
I don't know. See, I'm not involved in theater, so I don't know. But well, I know you don't say it to a dancer.
Well, our brand new this past January that we hired at the Historical Society, Carly Chioni, is our volunteer liaison special events person. And she's got a theater background.
Oh, okay.
And so, I use that phrase, and she said, we don't say that anymore.
Oh, okay.
So maybe it's just her. I don't know.
So, okay. So well, we don't
That's what
it.
The kids are saying.
Yes, but lovely. You know, it just is such a sweet and really, really well done performance from Jeannie Peterson. So
excellent. So we should talk about some other things coming up. Historical Society. December's a crazy busy month.
It's so busy. Let's jam it all in.
So we have tea and plum pudding.
I love it.
Still every afternoon on weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, and then the 26th through the 30th.
Reservations needed, or
if you bring us a group of six or more, because we have to kind of save a table for you.
Yeah.
But if you're just like a couple and you want to come, or one person and the kids, and if we're full, you just take a tour of the house and then you sit down when it's time.
Yeah. So. I like it. It's, you know, and I send my husband with the kids. He takes them every year, and he sometimes brings somebody else. So sometimes they're a group of six, but the kids get dressed up. Mm-hmm. They're on their good behavior, right? Because everyone else in there is quiet. You know, it's nice.
It's not a rowdy thing.
Right. But peer pressure is great, right? Because that's when kids do the best.
Well, so, there's just something serious about tea and teacups and sitting and you're dressed up.
It's become a really sweet holiday tradition. So I definitely would recommend it.
So bringing back a holiday tradition as well, Santa in the House, Sith, as I call it, or old-fashioned Christmas. We stopped doing this during COVID and then we didn't bring it back. Because Santa Claus used to live in Astoria right around the time we did this. So we had the real Santa Claus.
Oh my goodness.
And, you know, the other Santas that you see, we know are Santa's helpers.
Mm-hmm.
They look like Santa because he can't be everywhere.
Nope. Correct. Yeah.
But Santa apparently moved to Idaho now.
Is bummer. Where,
around the time that we do this event, Santa no longer lives in Astoria. He lives in Idaho.
Where there's more snow, so it makes sense.
And I did not want to do it without the real Santa, so we just haven't done it. But finally, the rest of my staff and my team, my volunteers, convinced me it's time to bring it back, and we'll have one of Santa's helpers.
Okay.
I mean, he looks like Santa.
It's great. I love it.
And it'll be wonderful, but for those people that take pictures every year and they've been doing it for 20 years and they're forcing their 20-year-old or 18-year-old, it's not going to look the same.
Okay, that's okay.
So I got to give you a warning. It's still good fun, though. And that will be Santa in the House is December 16th, Monday night, 6 to 8. And that one, you just come directly to the house.
Okay.
It's $5 for adult, cash only, and $2 for kids. And just come on in, you get a candy cane, there'll be crafts, hot chocolate, we're working on music, and some other good stuff.
And cash at the door.
Cash at the door.
Okay.
And then our Thursday night talk.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of a special one, December 19th, always the third Thursday. We're calling this History Science Theater.
Ooh, okay.
You know the TV show Mystery Science Theater.
Yes.
So we've got some old footage of Astoria.
Okay.
I believe was made by the Chamber of Commerce in 1952. And
fun.
Rather than actually creating a whole narrative, we're going to have a team, maybe Curator Chelsea, might be me, might be Sam, might be John Gutenberger. We're just going to kind of pass the mic and comment as we watch the footage.
Oh, how fun. And people in the audience, too, are going to be like, oh,
they can shout out, that's my uncle, that's so-and-so.
Oh, I love it. Well, that should be fun.
A little bit of old Astoria.
Good.
And then I also just found out, but I don't have a lot of details, but Santa is actually one of Santa's helpers, is up at the Astoria Column.
Oh.
The afternoon of, I believe it's December 21st.
Okay. Just in time. He's got to get back to work after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Handing out candy canes.
Okay.
So what I miss? Anything?
Well, Warrenton Community Library, our favorite little library in Warrenton, does have their Authors After Dark program. This is every month, but in December, so December 14th at 4 o'clock, it's Arlene Lemaire.
Oh, she wrote a book.
She wrote a book. She wrote a children's book. So she's going to be talking about that and talking about her history as a writer and interest in books. She's very interested in books. So I just thought that would be kind of fun. So 4 o'clock, December 14th at the Warrenton Community Library.
All right. You got a word?
I do have a word. Okay, this one's a noun. Doc and Doris.
Doc and Doris.
It's one word.
Yep. I like the sound of this.
I know. It's a fun one. And it's. I think that this one actually
and
we could do
noun.
This. It's a noun.
Doc and Doris.
Doc and Doris.
I believe Doc and Doris is a get-together of all your friends, and you're going to go around and knock on people's door. I don't
Ooh.
Know why.
Okay, you're wrong. It's a last drink, a parting drink, and a drink, or a drink for the road.
I'll have a Doc and Doris before I leave.
Yep. So John promised the beer was just a Doc and Doris, but 5 pints later, it was clear he wasn't leaving. I like that.
That could come back.
I mean, I feel like it could. The drink name could be
the Doc and Doris,
right? Yeah. Like
that's so fun to say.
I know. I like.
Although
that.
I feel like I should say it with some kind of an accent.
I know.
I don't know what kind of an accent.
English,
I don't know.
Or
Irish or Scottish.
Scottish.
Yeah. Doc and Doris. I'll have a Doc and Doris.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well.
All right. Let's see. History highlights of the day. Things that happened tomorrow, December 9th, 1775 at Fort Ticonderoga. You know I like Fort Ticonderoga. Ethan Allen.
Oh.
In New York, Henry Knox begins the historic transport of abandoned British artillery to Boston, Massachusetts, later forces the British to evacuate Boston. So I think you loyal listeners have heard me comment on we declared war, the United States, we declare independence, declare war on the biggest empire the world has ever seen at the time. And we had exactly 6 cannon.
Wow.
And one of the reasons that Fort Ticonderoga and Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys grabbing the fort, besides all the whiskey that they stole from the king, was the artillery that was left. I don't know how many pieces I should, because I used to know this, but I know it more than doubled the artillery that we had. And that's why they had to get it out of there and get it to Washington, to Boston,
to where they could,
to where they could
it.
Use it. Yeah. So that's why that's important.
Okay.
1851, the first Young Men's Christian Association in North America is set up in Montreal.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
You wanted to start singing YMCA.
Y-M-C-A.
I can see it.
YMCA.
Yeah, don't
yep,
do that.
I did.
1926, the U.S. Golf Association legalizes steel shaft golf clubs.
Okay. Versus?
Wood.
Wood.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not a golfer.
I'm not either.
But I suspected that was important.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
All right. This one I just put in for you because you're a football fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a football fan. 1934, the New York Giants win the NFL championship by beating the Chicago Bears 30-13 in the famous Sneakers game.
I saw this, but I didn't read it. So I don't know what this one was.
With the temperature at 9 degrees, I had to look it up because I was like, sneaker game? What does that mean? With the temperature at 9 degrees in the Polo Grounds field, a sheet of ice, the Giants opened the second half wearing basketball shoes and scored 27 points in the final quarter to overcome a 13-3 Chicago lead. When the Giants were down 10-3 at the half, a New York assistant named Ray Flaherty had an idea. Flaherty pointed out that when he was at Gonzaga, the college team won a game played in similar conditions, partially because the players wore sneakers or basketball shoes instead of the cleats. The cleats weren't cutting into the sheet of ice, basically.
Oh, I get it. So it was too slippery.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it was a Sunday, and you couldn't find a sporting goods store open in the whole city. So they put a tailor named Abe Cohen in a cab to find basketball shoes at Manhattan College. I think he had to break in the door of the locker room and stole as many as he could to bring them back.
No way.
So they wore sneakers.
Does that say that?
Yeah. I just paraphrased, but.
Oh, how funny.
So they're playing football in sneakers.
Yeah, it still had to be cold. Oh my gosh.
All right. 1958, the John Birch Society is founded. Arch conservative group. It's actually in Indiana, I think, to fight communism is everywhere. It's in the United States.
Okay.
Then 1979, good news, smallpox is officially declared eradicated. No more smallpox. For now.
For now. I know. I saw that one too. Yep.
And I will definitely take any arguments. We're getting close. It's December. We should love our fellow human beings. And I don't know why this is the one that jumped out at me. So this is what I'm making our history highlight of the day. I think had the most impact on history. 1965, A Charlie Brown Christmas. The first Peanuts animated special premieres on CBS.
Aww. That's a good one.
It is a good one.
I like that. I think that's good. I mean, TV too, you know, really commercialized Thanksgiving as well. You know, it did kind of make it more of a travel holiday.
And this was a statement against that, because poor Charlie Brown, his little tree that was pathetic.
It has an impact.
Although I love, because this was the first animated, I love all the adults. Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah.
That has made me laugh since I was a kid.
The kids don't listen. Yeah.
Yes. So like whenever my parents lectured us, we would all look at each other if we weren't getting really lectured. And we just start going, wah, 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 wah.
That's a good.
So.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything?
The only thing you missed, and this certainly isn't a highlight, it just happened, which was Scarface opened in the theaters December 9th, 1983.
It's not an Oregon film, so I don't recognize it.
Yeah. You've never heard of it?
It doesn't exist.
No idea. But
I find this movie very overrated.
Yes and no. So see, I went to college at the University of Miami, right? So huge, huge Cuban population, the school itself, the city itself. And this movie was very impactful because it really highlighted sort of the trauma of coming to the United States from Cuba and then what you had to live with here. So the trauma of being poor and away from your family and away from your homeland and the options available to you. Of course, you know, he sort of took an option that was horrible, but it was one of the options available to him, and it was very popular. I mean, it really.
Oh, I know it's totally popular.
I hate to use the word romanticized, but it did because there were parts that you liked, and then there was also just very horrific parts too.
So, do you want to know why I'm not a fan of it?
Well, why? I mean, there's so many terrible things in the movie.
Even then, I was a bit of a historian or history geek. Scarface, great! This is gonna be a movie about Al Capone.
Oh.
And it was not.
No.
I felt very cheated.
Okay.
I was like, what's this false advertising? Scarface, that's Al Capone.
Right. So sorry.
It didn't even take place in Chicago.
Right. different story.
All right. So speaking of Nutcracker.
Yeah.
From earlier. Not just a minute ago.
Not from Scarface. Scarface to Nutcracker. I wanted to look up the history of the Nutcracker because it is, you know, being in it now, it's an odd story. And then all of the dance teachers teach the children or teach the dancers the story behind every single scene. Mm-hmm. So truly, and it's kind of interesting because some of the stories are a little off from what, you know, the main story. So I went down my own rabbit hole to discover why the Nutcracker became the Nutcracker.
Okay. So a little side note. I mean, we had her on the show for the local.
Mm-hmm.
It was very funny. Debbie Hill in my office that a lot of people know, the accountant. I was commenting to her earlier that we were going to do a show on the Nutcracker. And she instantly talked about when her daughter was in it. And how many years she was a part of it. And I was like, how many kids and their parents? Because it's always the parents, too.
Right.
And I said, what did you get roped into? She goes, oh, I was the treasurer of the board for, you know, 8 years. And then I was on this ticket committee. And it was just very funny.
Well, 48 years. Yeah. I mean, Jeannie Peterson is, she's amazing. Definitely a rock star. Still choreographing so many of these numbers. There are only 5 teachers that choreographed this. And they have the live orchestra with it, which is just its own sort of, just amazing entertainment.
It's a production.
Yes. So the Nutcracker is a time-honored tradition. But what have you ever seen a production and wondered and just wondered, where on earth did they come up with that story? I mean, I have, because it's an odd one. You wouldn't be alone. Although companies around the world, and especially in the United States, perform the Nutcracker each holiday season, the journey to stage involved some twists and turns. It did start with a nut that someone wanted to crack. Folks have been...
Okay. I just love that sentence.
Yeah. I knew
that could be the beginning of a book or a novel or something. Or I picture a narration to like some movie.
It's the narration to our story.
It all started with a nut that someone wanted to crack.
Folks have been using various tools to crack for thousands of years, but standing nutcrackers shaped like soldiers date back to the early 19th century Germany. You can visit the Leavenworth Nutcracker Museum online and learn even more.
I have visited that museum.
Oh, have you?
I have.
So you already know all the history.
It's, well,
is it huge or is
let's
it really
just
tiny?
Say, let's just say I do not plan on putting a resume in to become the executive director of the Nutcracker Museum in Leavenworth, Washington.
Oh, how funny. So the fashion for building nutcrackers of this type coincided with German romanticism in literature, leading Prussian writer E.T.A. Hoffmann to pen The Nutcracker and the Mouse King in 1816, which is based around a girl who befriends a nutcracker that comes to life on Christmas Eve and wages a battle against the evil Mouse King. Now, Hoffman's story is darker and more troubling than the version that reached the stage, of course, right? The Imperial Russian Ballet choreographer Marius Petipa chose to follow a light adaptation of the story written by Alexandre Dumas Perré. As a romanticist, E.T.A. Hoffman was reacting to the rational philosophy of the Enlightenment movement. That's part of the reason why the story as we know it may seem a bit nonsensical. His protagonist, named Marie in the original story, is a compassionate and imaginative girl in a family led by strict rules. Much like Dorothy Gale or Wendy Darling, Marie is trying to escape a world that has no room for fantasy.
No room for fantasy. That's horrible.
Well, and I love this because, I mean, and everyone, just to remind you, I mean, it's Clara. Clara's the big role, but it was Marie.
That's right.
Yeah.
So in Hoffman's story, Marie wakes up immediately after the battle scene to find herself in her own bed with a bandage on her arm. Her mother then came to the bedside and gazed upon her with anxious and inquiring looks. "Ah, dear mother," lisped little Marie, "are all the hateful mice gone, and is the good nutcracker safe?" "Do not talk such foolish stuff," replied her mother. "What have the mice to do with Nutcracker, you naughty child? You've caused us a great deal of anxiety. You played last night with your dolls until it was very late. You became sleepy, probably, and a stray mouse may have jumped out and frightened you. At all events, you broke a pane of glass with your elbow and cut your arm so severely that neighbor Wendelstern, who had just taken the piece of glass out of the wound, declares that it came very near cutting a vein, in which case you might have had a stiff arm all your life or perhaps have bled to death."
Wow.
That's chapter 6 from The Nutcracker and the Mouse King. The mother's bitter monologue shows a very different relationship than the warmth that usually exists between Clara and her mother on stage. Rather than celebrating the holiday season, Hoffman was making a point about the way of the world. In 1845, Dumas adapted Hoffman's story into a more whimsical, child-friendly version called The History of a Nutcracker. In addition to softening the events for a young audience and writing in his native French, he also changed the name of its heroine from Marie Stahlbaum, which translates into English as the Astor Steel Tree, to Marie Silverhaus. The name Silverhaus evokes a more magical image in keeping with his approach to the story.
Now, our heroine's name has changed, but it still hasn't become Clara. Although Marie is used for the lead character in some ballet productions, notably in George Balanchine's Clara, is the more common name given to our young lead among American companies. In both Hoffman and Dumas' story, Clara is the name of the doll that Marie's godfather, Drosselmeyer, gives her. It's unclear exactly why this switch happened, but it dates to the very first ballet of the story. In BTM's Nutcracker, choreographer Diana Cuato paid homage to the name Marie by giving it to Clara's cousin. Dumas's lighter take on the Nutcracker would prove consequential. Almost 40 years later, it would serve to inspire a brand new production in 19th century Russia. Now, much like the cosmopolitan roots of The Sleeping Beauty, the 1892 production of The Nutcracker came from international sources. Hoffman's Germanic influence remained in Dumas's French adaptation of the work, which captured the attention of Ivan Voslavsky. Voslavsky, the director of the Imperial Theaters of Russia, tasked French ballet master Marius Petipa and Russian composer Tchaikovsky with bringing The Nutcracker to the stage. Now, Tchaikovsky began work in February 1891, continuing his efforts while on an American tour that year for the opening of Carnegie Hall. His homeward journey took him through Paris, where he discovered a new instrument, the celestia, whose clear, bell-like tone was perfectly fitted to the Nutcracker's fairy tale ambiance. And the Celestia's ethereal notes, Tchaikovsky recognized the voice of his Sugar Plum Fairy and immediately wrote to his publisher asking that the instrument be acquired for the performance.
Okay, I think you've been practicing pronouncing all these words because you're kind of doing it just perfectly.
Oh, good, good.
And it's making me feel very self-conscious. So selections from the Nutcracker were first performed as an orchestral suite in March of 1892. The ballet proper debuted in December of that year. It was presented at St. Petersburg's Mariinsky Theater on a double bill with Tchaikovsky's one-act opera, Iolanta. In a letter to a friend, he himself remarked, apparently the opera gave pleasure, but the ballet not really. And as a matter of fact, in spite of all the sumptuousness, it did turn out to be rather boring. He thought little of it, describing it as infinitely worse than Sleeping Beauty. The reference was to the second of his three ballets. The first had been Swan Lake. Yet responsibility for the failure was not apparently wholly the composer's. Petipa had fallen ill, and the choreography was instead devised by his less inspired assistant. Oh, sure.
Bummer.
Blame it on the assistant. Additionally, the scenery and costumes were panned as tasteless, and the performance of the ballerina who danced the role of the Sugar Plum Fairy was widely criticized. The newspapers reviled, and he did not live to see the piece succeed. Despite the failure of its initial performance, the Nutcracker has become the most frequently performed of all ballets and has served as an introduction to classical music for many young people. Because the first act is set at a Christmas party, the ballet is often presented at Christmas time. Although the Russian production of the Nutcracker did not last for very long, it continued to be revived long enough for George Balanchine to perform it as a student. When the famous choreographer eventually founded New York City Ballet, this period of his life was a particularly fond memory.
And, you know, costumes are kind of a big deal. So with the Little Ballet Theater, most of the costumes are hand sewn.
It's amazing.
Isn't it? And then the role, they're hand sewn each year. They're not all new every year, but of course they always have to be adjusted.
They've got to be fitted too, for whoever's wearing it, right?
But some of them are just created from new. So if you did see Clara in this last weekend's production, that one was sewn by one of the grandmothers this year for this year's girl. I mean, it's beautiful. Uh-huh. And it's just kind of neat too that these are really stunning costumes that make it come alive. So obviously they needed that in the 1890s. And while the 1892 production had been nostalgic for the long since past Russian holidays, Balanchine's Nutcracker evoked the choreographer's own childhood in the early 20th century. His production has many of the elements that were panned by critics of the original: an abundance of children on stage, relatively little plot, and a limited role for the ballerina to play. But this time something different happened. Audiences loved it. Now, without the particular high expectations of Imperial Theater audiences, New York theatergoers recognized the joy and magic that the production held. Although the New York City Ballet was not the first U.S. company to stage a production of the Nutcracker, Balanchine's take on the ballet is the one that cemented it into the American holiday tradition.
So now how many years have your kids been involved?
So Carly's only done it 2 years. So with the Little Ballet Theater, which is part of Maddox Dance Studio, you have to be 7 to audition, with a requirement of 2 years of ballet prior to auditioning. And anyone is allowed to audition. So from any dance company or
so anyone. Could I audition?
You can, but you're not a child, so I guess you probably can't. And they do
crush my dreams. Go ahead.
They have to show up in, you know, their hair in a bun, black leotard, pink tights. And they're given a number. The number's pinned to the front of their leotard. I mean, it is serious business. Carly was terrified the first time she did it. And then she walks in. And, of course, it's her 5 dance teachers, right? She's had them all. So they're the sweetest, like, women and very talented dancers themselves. And they're taught just a very short little dance. And then they dance it in front of everyone as a group. So
So it's not just one kid on the stage.
It's not just one. Okay. Nope. And especially for the smaller roles, you are limited in what you can try out for, right? So Carly is not allowed to audition for Clara at this age in her dancing career. So she has she can try out for a different amount of roles. But it's great because what I love about it, because I end up volunteering backstage and helping with quick changes, is I love watching the professional ballerinas who come from the Eugene Ballet Company with our big girls, who are the, you know, seniors in high school, juniors, sophomores, freshmen, with the little girls, right, that are my little girls right now, you know, the 7, 8, 9 year olds that are just in awe of these older girls. And they're all getting along. They're all cheering each other. You can hear them from the side clapping, and they come off after a solo and they're just, you know, awe inspired by the hard work that led up to it, because they're all there, you know, the hours long of rehearsals, to actually seeing it happen and come to life. I love that relationship building.
And that's one of the things I like about it, watching from afar, is that it's not a small production.
No, right.
So they feel like they're a part of something big and huge.
Right.
It's not just the school play. It's not just five people on a Girl Scout or Boy Scout skit or something.
Right.
That there's all these people involved in different aspects, all these adults, all these professionals brought in, and then all my friends, and then big audience watching.
And it's aside from dance class. So there's no additional fee for making it. So it's a it's a Saturday practice. This is on top of her regular dance classes. And then leading up to it, there are 3-hour rehearsals that occur in the 2 weeks leading up to it, twice a week, prior to the dress rehearsal. And the dress rehearsal is with that live orchestra. I can't explain how important having that live orchestra is as well, because that is something that doesn't happen often in live theater. You often are just getting recordings of the music.
Yeah.
And so things can happen with live music as well, right? I mean, it does add that sort of element of surprise, and the just adds to the entertainment value of it. It's pretty amazing.
There we go.
There we go.
So we've got like 2 minutes. You want to do a little local history?
We can. Let's do it.
All right. So these are things that happened locally in the past here. So let me see through. I like this one. December 13th, 1928. Dr. Richard Delahunt of Portland, Dean of the University of Oregon Medical School and Chief Surgeon at the Shrine Hospital, Portland, was the principal speaker at the staff meeting of the Clatsop County Medical Association held at 8 o'clock last evening at Columbia Hospital. 17 Astoria doctors were present at the meeting, and 4 out-of-town doctors, including Dr. Harold Fritz of Cathlamet, Dr. V.S. Gary of Westport, Dr. J. Ball of Clatskanie, and Dr. Dylan Hunt of Portland. Following the meeting at the hospital, the group adjourned to the home of Dr. Mrs. R.J. Pillington on Franklin Avenue, where a buffet supper and smoker was enjoyed. I love all these doctors are getting around smoking cigarettes.
That's funny. Also in 1928, the same day, actually, the combination of an 8-foot tide and a storm at sea off the Oregon coast resulted in a spectacular surf yesterday at Seaside during the noon hour, according to Seaside men who were here today. The surf battered the seawall and in some places even hurled pieces of bark over the railing to the sidewalk along the prom. And in one instance, broke a window in the building on the prom just south of the Oats Natatorium. The Kinney Fishing Pier near Tillamook Head was the chief sufferer, considering damage being done there by the high waves. So I had those king tides back then, too.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Nutcracker, huge success. Always wonderful. Tea and plum pudding at the Flavel House. Thursday night talks on December 19th. And Santa in the house and Santa up at the column.
It's a merry, merry holiday.
It is. Busy, busy, busy.
Yes.
So go make some history for you and yours. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.